It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Welcome into Sunday Skate. Your Boston Bruins, a late night game. Nice 10:30 Eastern start. Can't be bad on a Saturday. You know, they can't even give us that half hour to work with. Make it a 7 o'clock local, 10 Eastern. Bruins lose 3-1 to the San Jose Sharks, the team with the worst record in the NHL. We'll get into that. We'll get into the state of this team, what we're expecting over the rest of the season, because they have now lost 5 in a row. I'm Scott McLaughlin with Andrew Razor Raycroft and Bridget Prue. You can join us. Any thoughts on this team this season? We can look ahead to the offseason. 617-779-7937. That's the number to call in or text. But guys, what do we even make of this team? Because we knew they weren't in after the trade deadline. They sold, right? This is what happens. You sell off pieces. Generally, that means your season's over. You can look at the new guys. You can be excited about some stuff. You get that boost right after with the two wins over Florida and Tampa. But now you're seeing it. I saw Kevin Paul DuPont from the Globe tweeted out this morning. Bruins are now, on points percentage, closer to last place in the Eastern Conference than they are to a playoff spot.
Yeah.
So this losing streak, getting dominated by some better teams, and now losing to San Jose, a not very good team at all. Are they really just, this is how bad the roster has gotten? Mm-hmm. Or are we seeing other stuff start to slip with this team in terms of effort or anything else? Because I got to admit, this is even a little uglier than I was expecting.
No, this is San Jose has a better roster than you right now.
Scary.
Top to bottom, they're a better roster. You got rid of Brad Marchand, Charlie Coyle, and Brandon Carlo. And I think people like maybe that we're excited. Oh, prospects, draft picks. Oh, it's so great. It's so exciting. Yes. You just gave up three great NHL hockey players. And I think everybody's going to start to learn a lesson here that NHL hockey players are really hard to find and really hard to come by. And guys that play pro and have careers like those three guys I mentioned are hard to find. And when you don't have them, you are not quite an NHL hockey team, and we're finding that. We're not even talking about McAvoy and Lindholm on the back end. They're not an NHL roster hockey team. They're just not right now. And Yeah, I love the enthusiasm for Husnadinov. I love the enthusiasm for Vinny Letteri, and I love the fact that Jacob Lauko is back. But they're not top six players. They are not top six. They're not top nine players, folks. Like, Husnadinov, yes, he's fun. He skates around really fast, and he's a good player. Like, he's a good energy guy. We haven't had it, you know, they've lacked speed at times this year. But he was on a playoff team that was barely playing him just 2 weeks ago. And now he's getting 15 minutes of ice time in the National Hockey League. So no, it's strictly down to the roster, and it's strictly down to the fact that you're down minimum five NHL hockey players than what you were three weeks ago.
Yeah, because you're also subtracting, subtracting McAvoy and Lindholm
Correct.
Out of the equation. And
yeah.
it's tough because they
can't break the puck out.
No.
They don't have defensemen that can get the puck and move it. And now you've got Mason Lowry struggling, not surprising because he's playing 20 minutes a night. Nikita Zadorov's holding his head above water, at least. He's the one guy on the back end that is an NHL player. He's played in the playoffs. He knows what it's like. He can play against and take a bit more of a load. Andrew Peak, I think, is doing an unbelievable job for what he is and probably is gaining a lot from this as a player, which hopefully moves into next season. But after that, you know, so you're essentially working on 2.5D on the back end at this point.
Yeah, and to just add to the point of, like, throwing guys into roles that they really shouldn't be in, like, Henry Jokiharju was playing 22 minutes. He's playing first-pairing minutes.
That's right.
He was falling out of favor in Buffalo.
He got traded for a fourth-round pick.
Yeah.
On OT, like, the worst team in the league.
Listen, like, I've mostly been encouraged by what Henry Jokiharju's done.
Yeah,
but it's, yes, to the point of, like, what this roster is, outside of your top line, which has mostly continued to be good, I thought they had of all nights, I thought they had an off night last night, and if they're on, you probably find a way to win that game. But outside of that, everyone else is being asked to do more than, quite frankly, than they're really capable of. You got, you know, bottom six guys playing second line. You got fourth liners or honestly AHL guys playing third line. And then, like I said, like Jokiharju playing top pairing minutes. Even Zadorov, like you said, he's keeping his head above water. He's definitely, you know, picked up his play here in the second half. But he should be second, third pairing, not leading your team in ice time every night. So
he's not Drew Doughty.
Right, yeah.
You're going to play tonight.
Yeah, you would have given him $8 million a year if that's what
that's
he was.
Right.
You're paying him $5 million. That's third, fourth defenseman money. So, yeah, and, you know, goalies are getting hung out to dry. Like, we can get into Swayman and or Korpisalo at some point today.
Poor Jonas.
Yeah, you know, like, he was good last night.
Yeah, again.
What can he do? There's, like you said, they're just getting pinned in their own zone for such long stretches. And I thought that second period last night, I thought was trending towards another one of these second periods where, like, they just can't get out of their zone and they can't get a change with the long change. And they did start to push back a little bit late in the period, finally. But it was like there was probably a 5 or 6 minute stretch there early to middle of second period where, once again, like, they just couldn't get out of their zone. They got out barely long enough to get changes. And it's like, that's happening against the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah, it's one of the weirder box scores when you look at it. Neither team in any of the periods had more than single-digit shots. Like, it was like, we're watching two teams just not be able to generate at the same time.
Yeah,
and
this was actually bad hockey to watch.
Yeah,
like the Bruins Sabres game the other night, it was like you knew you weren't watching two good teams, but it was at least pretty entertaining. Yeah, this was actually just like bad hockey both ways.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think, what are we up to? Like 13 periods in a row where the Bruins haven't had more than 10 shots or 10 or fewer shots. So it just keeps going up and up. And now it's against San Jose, which is a team that is like the epitome of a rebuild. Like, they're in, you know, the middle of their rebuild. And not to say they don't have good young players, because they do. Obviously, Will Smith and Macklin Celebrini are two really good players. They're going to be good in the league. But
Jacob, did you like that Will Smith BU jersey?
Oh, no.
I mean, I was not a fan, but, like, you know, rules are rules, and Macklin did it first, you know, and they're just such good friends. It's great to see, you know, so even though I it's tough to see him wear that BU jersey. It's kind of ugly.
Oh, yeah. Yep. He's a BC guy, in case people didn't know. Jacob is a big BC fan. You go to BC, right? Are you still at BC?
Oh, yeah, I'm still there. Okay. I got the selection show coming up at 3, so excited for that.
Well, yeah, we got Razor. Razor's going to be on the selection show.
Yes, ma'am. I'm on my way. That's my excitement for the day.
Yeah, Razor is, like, completely dressed up, and I'm, like, in... Me and Scott just rolled out of bed.
Oh, I would have been rolling out of bed, believe me. Believe me.
He's
I'm
in,
envious.
Like, a suit.
I'm so envious.
Well, I did at first wonder. I was like, is Razor dressed up because he's going to the selection show?
Or did I just stay up all night?
Yeah, he just got it from the Nesson set.
After watching that game last night, did he just get blasted drunk all night long by himself in his car in front of the radio station? I thought about it. Believe me, I thought about it. This is why I don't like not playing. Like, this is why I don't like losing. This is why I don't like looking ahead. This is why it happens really fast in this league. I've been on these teams. I've seen teams. I've had friends on teams like this and organizations where you take your eye off the ball, or you start looking and wanting prospects and wanting draft picks, and then all of a sudden you're not in the playoffs for 6 years. And I'm not saying that's the case here. I'm just saying it can happen really, really fast. And again, it's happened fast to this team, because 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we're talking about having a good team. Everyone gets traded. Then we're talking about, well, they've had a good bounce back after the deadline. Now we're talking about them getting smoked by San Jose and losing five in a row. And it makes me nervous, because it's fleeting. And there's a lot of teams in the league that want success that can't get it.
Yeah, I think I heard you call the game at one point a pillow fight.
Yeah, it was a pillow fight. Well, it was 100% a pillow
fight. Which actually felt like a very accurate way to describe it, because it was just bad hockey, like we were talking about. But
yeah, you had Lauko and Barclay Goodrow try to get something going with a fight. Lauko couldn't see. He has a jersey pulled over his head. But even that, like, it didn't do anything. That didn't last. There was no real boost in energy on either side from that point. And Brazy, you're right. Like, I warned against this too, leading up to the trade, of like, against the people who wanted to quote unquote tear it down, you know, who wanted like the longer term rebuild. It's like, it gets really ugly. And if this stretches on now, I think they're going to be better next year, almost no matter what.
Like, yes.
Just filling in a roster with free agency, you're going to fill in those second and third lines with better players.
You're not going to have Vinny Vitale in your, you know, in your middle six.
No, sorry, Vinny. Sorry, Cole Koepke, like Jacob Lugger. Like, they're not playing middle 6 minutes next year. So you're going to fill in the roster better. But if you're talking about like getting back to contention, it's like, that's not one or two or even three pieces away. Like, that's some significant pieces away that this team's going to need. And yeah, if you get it wrong and you miss on some of these next steps, like Reza said, like, that's how you end up at 4, 5, 6 years out of the playoffs. That's how you end up with 30-year-old Pasternak and McAvoy wondering if this is where they want to be long-term, wondering if like they're going to be asking for a trade. So yeah, it can go downhill real fast. And it has, in this season.
Yeah.
Which we kind of expected when you looked at this roster post trade deadline. The question is now, like, how long are you down here, and how well can you build back in 1 year? Like, where can you get to next year with this team? And we can get into that. I already see Maria on the phones. We'll get to her after this break. Again, you can call us 617-779-7937. Jacob has you trending, and then we'll be back with
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth-shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Sunday Skate. Welcome back to Sunday Skate. Scott McLaughlin here with Andrew Razor Raycroft and Bridget Prue. Jacob Lassner behind the glass. Talking about the Bruins' five-game losing streak. 3-1 loss to San Jose last night. And I want to go to Maria in Watertown here because she brings up a point that we didn't get to in the first segment that is worth discussing on relating to the winning goal. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning. And this is a follow-up question. I think I brought this up last week on coaching decisions, and I find this coaching staff to be, they should be reviewed as extensively as this roster has been reviewed. Why was that goal not challenged? I need to understand why. They looked at it and looked at it and looked at it. You are desperate for points. You're desperate for a win, even if it's just to build the confidence of a team whose offense has gone virtually anemic if Pasta can't put the puck in the net. Pasta looks so frustrated, so annoyed. Please explain to me why. And you know, if we're looking at this roster holistically, Sweeney and Neely better be looking at this coaching staff with the same lens moving forward. Thank you for the time, guys.
All right, thanks,
and
Maria.
Bridget, thank you.
Yep. So, start with the second part. Yeah, the coaching staff is going to be reviewed.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
Joe Sacco has the interim tag, so there's nothing at all guaranteed there. And I'm sure there's going to be changes. Like,
yeah.
At the very least, there's an opening on the staff already. But, yeah, they're going to need a full... They're going to need to hire a head coach. So whether that's Sacco or someone else, like...
They don't have a head coach.
Yeah, exactly. He's got the interim tag for a reason.
There's tons of work to do there, no question.
So on the goal, so to set this up for people who missed it, which I don't blame you if you did not watch that.
Because this happened at like 1 a.m.
So Sharks have a long offensive zone possession, eventually score on a puck that deflects off a leg in front. And ends up in the back of the net. Bruins call a timeout. They're looking at the replays. You guys are showing them on Nesson. Probably about a minute before the goal, before the Sharks got into the zone. Sure looks like they entered offsides. Timothy Liljegren is carrying the puck in. There's a Shark player coming back to tag up. Puck goes in the zone before the retreating Sharks player comes back out. And then Liljegren picks up the puck and keeps going in. So I will say this. I went to bed thinking the Bruins absolutely screwed that up, and it was clearly offsides. I will say I woke up, I had a DM from someone who I trust more than myself on this, who said that would have stood as a goal if they had challenged, because the way the rule is written,
is as long as you're not touching the puck when it goes into the zone, that guy can tag up and come back. It's similar to the Cale Makar play in the playoffs a couple years ago against Edmonton, where, sure, to all of us, looks like he has possession, but because he didn't actually touch the puck, they don't rule it as possession, he scores and it stands. So I think it's a dumb rule, because to me, I look at that and I'm like, Liljegren has possession. Like, he never loses the puck. It's just not technically on his stick. But I guess by the letter of the law, that's considered onside.
So for me, this is one of those situations where I understand why people like Maria calling in is upset. Like, I understand why they're frustrated, but I also always look at it from the other side. Like, do you think the coaches don't want to win? Like, do you think the coaches are blatantly making a decision?
Well, that's the conspiracy.
Yeah,
Don Sweeney's phoning down. Like, yeah, tank, tank, tank.
Like, it. That's so hard. Like, and I again, I was like, we were sitting at the desk last night, and I was trying to like, okay, yeah, of course, and you know, oh, just challenge it to see what happens. Well, if the video judges have been given a tape by the NHL or given an example that this kind of goal, this exact play, if you challenge it, it will not go in your favor, then why would you just challenge? You can't just challenge it for the sake of challenging it. You're still only down one goal.
Yeah,
you don't go down.
If you miss it, the game's most likely over.
Correct.
Then the goal's on the board and you're going on the penalty kick.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So I understand a lot. Wow, you have nothing to lose. Like, just do it. Well, no, if you've been told and you have an example, which we wouldn't have these examples as fans. They have this dialogue all the time. The video judges, the GMs, the coaches call leagues all the time. The leagues tell these people all of the time on what the new standard is. And if they've gotten evidence that this probably, like your DM, this probably will not go in your favor, you can't call it there. Like, you can't roll the dice there. You want to try and get a point and get into overtime and hopefully beat San Jose. So the idea you're flipping about it is funny to me. And the idea that these guys just, like, weren't trying really hard. Like, they didn't even think that this could obviously they were trying to find a way to challenge it. They called a timeout. They were looking at it. They're on the mic. They're over and over. Like, they're agonizing over it. And at the end, they probably knew somewhere or another the league was going to allow that goal to stand.
Yeah. And it's not just the it's the video staff too. Like,
yeah,
they
that's
have
not
good,
on Joe Sacco. Yeah. Doesn't even have anything in his ear. He's probably saying, "Challenge this. Look at this. This has to be offside."
Yeah, you can tell Chris Kelly's the one with.
Yes.
He's got the earpiece. He's talking to the video guys, and you can see them, like, they're pointing at the screen, like they're looking at it.
Like, you can see Sacco come over, like, we're challenging this, and Kels is like, I'm in the, like, these guys are telling me no. That's essentially how that went on the bench. To break it down. And yeah, it's you know, I get, and again, I get the frustration, I get where we're at in the season, but again, just you know, they've been around the league a long time. Everyone has different, they have inside information that we all don't.
And yeah. Sacco did talk about it. I don't know if you wanted to throw to that here, but
yeah, sure. Yeah, we can Jacob, if we have it, let's play Sacco's answer talking about why they decided not to challenge.
There was some discussion about maybe challenging on that last one.
Yeah, there was some discussion when we looked at it with our crew. You know, we just decided the player that was entering the zone with the puck didn't have possession of it as soon as he crossed the blue line. Therefore, he allowed his teammate the ability to tag up there.
And again, like, I will totally agree with anyone who says it's a dumb rule.
Yeah, 100%. Me too. I will not argue. And he was stick handling. He was not trying to do the Cale Makar lose possession. They just got really lucky that the puck wasn't directly on his stick. I will not debate or argue anybody on that in any way whatsoever. They got really lucky.
Yeah,
really lucky.
When Joe Sacco says there, we decided he doesn't have possession, what he means is the puck wasn't physically on his stick.
Yeah.
Because that's the way the rule's written. But, like, to us, and to, like, anyone who understands hockey, he had possession. Like, he was in full control. The puck wasn't going anywhere. It wasn't slipping away from him. There was no Bruin knocking it away. But it wasn't on his stick. And that's the letter of the law, which, yeah, so.
Yeah, in the, like, with the idea being there's no, like, gray area for, like, being, it being subjective what possession is.
That's
like,
right.
Possession is, it's on, like, it's physically touching your stick.
Yeah. Okay, so.
It's a one in a million.
Yeah.
It won't happen again. Fortunately, that didn't happen in the Stanley Cup Finals Game 7. And
well, the Makar one.
The Makar one was a big
Western
goal.
Western Conference Finals.
It was a big goal.
Yeah.
That was way more, like, Makar's was cooler, though. He legitimately, like, lost
possession.
You could tell
he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, he left possession on purpose. This guy had no idea, like, he just had no idea what the hell was going on out there. He just got lucky.
Yeah. So, look, the other part of it, so that ends up being the deciding goal, the winning goal. But the other part of this, like, as it relates to the Bruins, is they're just not scoring enough, and they're not getting enough chances. They scored once. They had 23 shots on goal, which, great. It's the first time in four games they've had over 20.
And they outshot San Jose. It was 23-21. No, it's such a low total. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. They've now gone seven straight games, every game since the trade deadline, with 25 shots on goal or fewer. So I looked this up last night to update the stat, and that's the only time in recorded history that the Bruins have done that for seven straight games, 25 shots or fewer. The NHL started officially tracking shots in 1959-60. So just an incredible level of offensive futility. They've scored two goals or fewer in four straight games now. They're not even getting power play chances because, quite frankly, they don't have the puck enough to even challenge defenses or force them into taking penalties. Like, they've now had two power plays or fewer in, I think it's 10 of their last 11 games. Like, it's tough. There's, you know, again, there's, they have a good top line. They have David Pastrnak, who, again, I think had a down game last night, but otherwise obviously has been awesome since the turn of the year to 2025. And then after that, it's like, okay, you're excited to see Casey Mittelstadt. He scores the only goal. Like, you want to see what he does. Husnudinov has created some chances. We can talk about Fabian Lysell. He played his second NHL game last night. Had three shots on goal, which was tied for second on the team. You know, only Pastrnak had more than that. So there's a couple pieces there that you're interested in seeing, but the net product is they're just not generating offense because they're not getting out of their zone. They're not transitioning cleanly. They're not sustaining offensive zone time. I know Sacco, after Thursday's game, called out overpassing. He said he thinks they're overpassing, which I think there's some examples of that. Morgan Geekie had a very noticeable play off the rush last night where he overpassed when he probably should have shot. But it's hard to overpass a ton when you're not even getting in those positions in the first place.
Yeah, and I feel like I've noticed it a lot from Elias Lindholm. Like, maybe he should be taking the shot when he's trying to dish it off. And Pavel Zacha, too, as being alongside Pastrnak, I think both of those guys defer to him a lot on, you know, should we pass or should we shoot? But Fabian Lysell, like you mentioned, he had three shots. He was pretty effective. His speed was noticeable. And he did help with transition a little bit. Like, that's been one of the issues, is not having guys that can break the puck out and carry the puck and, like, through the neutral zone with enough speed. And we at least get to see him. Like,
he drew a penalty, too.
Drew a penalty, yep. And it's nice to just be able to actually kind of, you know, watch his game and see what he can do when he's playing NHL guys. Now it's the Sharks. But I think a lot of Bruins fans and you know, us in the media just kind of want to see him with our own eyes because we don't have a lot of time to go to Providence and watch his games. But yeah, Razor, what did you think of him and you know, his call up and maybe whether or not he should be not just an emergency call up and he should stick around?
Well, no, he's going to stick around now. Mark Kastlik's gone home, so you know he's going to at least play the next four games.
Yep.
You know, through this road trip, and it's make or break for him. He's played 160 games in the minors. This is it. This is it. So hopefully we see stuff. I thought it was a good start last night. You know, you're going to have, like I said it last night on the broadcast as well, and I've said it a million times, and you have to do something special to stay in this league. Like, to play in this league, you have to do something special. And whether if that's a goaltender, you got to go out and win your first four starts in the NHL. Like, whether you suck or whether you're bad, whether you're good, whether you feel good, whether you feel bad, you have to go out and get a shutout in your first three games. Find a way to win your first four games. Find a way to go 10-5-0 in 15. Like, you have to establish yourself. If you're a forward, you have to get a hit. You have to get three shots a night. You have to get a couple of points. You have to score. You're a defenseman. You have to shut down. You have to show something. So this is it for Lysell. Yeah, he's got 11 more games to show something. And if you don't, there's going to be five more free agents. There's going to be two more draft picks that start jumping you at this point. He needs to do something special this week, whether that's score two goals off of his head somehow, find a way to do it, or find a way to score an unbelievable shorthanded goal, whatever it is. He's got to impress here over the next 3 weeks. And I thought last night was a good start. I did, for just his second NHL game. He's in a good place. And then tonight he's going to go up against LA on a back-to-back, and you can't disappear if you're him.
Where do you stand in general? Because for six games after the trade deadline, there were no lineup changes.
Yeah.
So now we finally see Lysell. You still have Potter's been down in Providence. Georgi Mrkalov's down there. Fraser Minton, who you just got in the Carlo trade, is down there. Where do you come down on the season's gone, just give these kids a chance and see what they got, versus let some of these guys stay in Providence and maybe keep it to just Lysell for now?
It's difficult because typically what's going to happen, like, you're not very good. Right, you're not good, so you're not setting themselves up. You're not setting any of your younger guys up for success in any way whatsoever. So typically, what's going to happen is you're going to call guys up, and they're going to have a game like last night, like at best. Like Lysell, probably in the scenario and the situation, you know, how miserable it might be on the road right now with everybody. Like, he probably did best case scenario last night. So when you do that, if you had three of those guys in the lineup last night, like, it's tough to put them in successful situations. So I wouldn't mind seeing Fraser Minton play one game, but you're not. It's not like you're gonna wholesale call four guys up and then wholesale sit four of the guys that are in the NHL right now. That doesn't really do a lot of good. You might see some guys like whatever's going on with Kastelic, right? Like, I don't know, maybe probably if they were battling for a playoff spot, he stays. You know, like, you're going to start seeing guys get nicked up that, okay, you know, if it was game one of the playoffs, you'd be playing. Because it isn't, and because we're completely done, you know, take this night off, take this week off. We don't need to make this any worse. Get ready for the summer. We'll bring guys up. So you might get one-offs, but to wholesale four guys in, four guys out is not beneficial for the organization.
But, and you're not allowed to make that many call-ups. So they're limited there. They can do the emergency call-up thing as much as they want. But that normally means, like, you're not necessarily even going to play the emergency call-up guys, because if somebody's still healthier. Obviously, in this case, it was Kastelic that ended up out of the lineup, ended up not being healthy. But to your point about, you know, you're not going to sit down the NHL guys, but, like, these guys are Providence guys too. So, like, I guess the thought would be, like, get a look at the younger guys that they have in Providence rather than somebody like Vinny Leteri or Patrick Brown.
Well, maybe the younger guys aren't ready.
Yes.
Well, and each one's, you know, each of them are kind of different situations.
Correct.
Too, where, like, Patra's played a lot of NHL games, so it's not like you're going to
learn something from him.
Right, like, you're not going to put him in some situation he hasn't been in the NHL already. Yes. Merkulov hasn't gotten a ton of NHL time, but like it's 10 games. That's different than one, which is what Fabian Lysell had before last night. Fraser Minton hasn't played here, but he has played 19 NHL games in Toronto. So some of those other guys, there is, at least they've had a little bit, a few more looks in the NHL. Lysell, because, listen, Fabian Lysell wasn't, if you were just calling someone up on pure merit, like who's really earned it recently, Fabian Lysell's been pretty inconsistent in Providence. He hasn't dominated down there. Like, he probably wouldn't have been the first choice going just off that. But it makes sense from this perspective of he's the one you want to take a look at because he's only played one NHL game. So that is a guy where you're now at a point where you say, okay, let's see what he can do here. So anyways, we got to take another break here. You can call in or text us 617-779-7937. And we'll be right back with more Sunday Skate. Welcome back to Sunday Skate. That was Bruins interim head coach Joe Sacco talking about Fabian Lysell playing his second career NHL game. We were talking a little bit about Lysell last segment. Guys, what do we want to see the rest of the season? We know playoffs now are out of reach. As I mentioned off the top, they are closer to last place in the conference by points percentage than they are to a playoff spot. But these guys individually still have something to prove, right? Like, is that what we're watching for? Is just who stands out individually, who earns a spot for next year? Is there anything else that we really want or need to see from this team down the stretch?
I guess, like, especially the guys that you just added, those guys automatically have that, you know, that they're playing for. Potentially some of these guys have terms, so like they're going to either be in Boston or in Providence. They're not leaving in the off season for free agency.
Casey Mittelstadt has two more years on a real contract, $5.75 million.
Yeah, and then I believe Kuznetsov's an RFA, so he is somebody that you're trying to take a look at to see if you want to keep him. So in a way, he's playing for his next contract, and then Fabian Lysell, like we talked about last segment, like he's obviously just trying to make the NHL. Like, he's just trying to stick and make a case for himself to stick. And I think it's interesting, Razor, that you think he's going to be here the entire rest of the season, because I would like to see that. But they tend to just, like, send him back down.
Well, no, he's going to be there the rest of the trip. They only have 12 forwards. So he has rest of the trip. They're not calling anyone up.
But you said you think he'll be here for the final.
No, I said the rest of this trip, and he's got to do something special.
Oh, okay.
But he has 12 games. If he doesn't do anything in this trip, which allows him to stay up for the rest of the season, like, you don't just get 10 NHL games given to you. This is so frustrating, this narrative that people think that because you're drafted that you just get, like, it's so insulting for a guy who played in the NHL to hear people say you just get to play NHL games. You know how hard it is to play in the NHL? Like, you have to give, like, what you have to do to do that. And I hear it all the time, and it's just, it grades on me so much that just because he was drafted, just because, like, we just said, like, if it was based off merit, he probably, like, he's getting this chance because he's a first-round pick. If he's a sixth-round pick, we've never heard of this guy ever. We never have. And he's not getting this call-up either. So he's getting his chance this week, these four games, to prove to stay for the fifth game. And then you play the fifth game really hard to prove that you can stay for a sixth game. And then a seventh game. And that's how, like, this builds, and that's how guys stay in the league. But the idea that it's just, you know, it's just given to somebody, and you just let him have his 10 games so he, you know, and we'll see what we have. Well, there's a lot of guys that would have loved to have had 10 games given to them, but and probably deserved it a lot in a lot of different situations that don't get it. So that's all I'm saying is he's going to get his chance this week to prove that he can stay up for the rest of the year. And it's a lot easier to make an NHL hockey team, as we see every training camp, when you've played in the NHL and you've put a good product together and you've put some good tape together, rather than just trying to make it cold turkey out of camp. It's really hard to do that because that's not how teams base their summers.
Well, and the counter that I can hear from Bruins fans is, well, why does a Vinny Lattery get more chances than a Patrick Brown? And these guys who are, you know, if we're being honest, like career journeymen,
yeah,
who probably aren't a significant part of your future, like, why do they get to keep getting reps?
So I just, and it's great because I have all the AHL standings pulled up because I just want to make sure where everyone's at. So do you know who's leading the team in points per game in the minors this year?
I believe that's Vinny Lattery.
Correct. There you go. So that's how that works. Guess who we heard all the time? This guy stinks. This guy can't play. This guy is so bad. You know, why don't we bring a young guy up so he can do what they're doing? Oliver Wahlstrom has 10.6 goals in 9 games in the minors. This guy would score 50 goals in the minors if he was there all season, Oliver Wahlstrom. Because he's a really good hockey player that just hasn't found, like, he can score goals. If he was in the minors, he would have 50 goals and he would lead the league if he was there the entire season. So 35 points isn't that special in the AHL. Even though, like, that's kind of my point is, you know, you hear, oh, put Trent Frederick in the minors. You know how many points Trent Frederick would get in the AHL and how dominant he would be if he played in the AHL on a daily basis compared to what these other guys are doing? Like, that's where it's like, you have to be careful. That's all I'm saying. You have, it can be, like, really dig in. Because, again, Oliver Wahlstrom has, you know, is going to score a bunch of goals in the playoffs. I can almost guarantee it for the Providence Bruins. Because he's good. He's talented. And
bold
I know
strategy by Don Sweeney to add him for a great AHL playoff run.
Yeah, I mean, they're a good team. They will end up going once all these guys, you know, Lattery and Brown and the whole thing. They can go on a good run, and that'll be good for Patra and Lysell. And that's where you can also make a difference because the Bruins are going to be out, and Don will be at every single one of those games, and Adam McQuaid will be at every single one of those games, and it'll be good for those guys to go on a run. You do have a chance to make it to the NHL from having those kind of runs, but the reality is it's you make it in this situation that Fabian Lysell is in. You don't, but it's not given to you. He's got to score. Like, he does. He has to score to really get people to notice him.
Yeah, and that I was going to ask as a follow-up, and you really start to answer, like, is there value in this playoff run down in the AHL for these younger guys? And there is. There mm-hmm. absolutely is. There's always value to playing for a championship and playing meaningful hockey, even if it's not in the NHL. Like, it's guys who are in college, they're going to be playing the NCAA tournament coming up. Like, that's valuable career experience. If it's the Memorial Cup in major juniors, whatever it is, if you're competing for a trophy, like, that's valuable experience.
You always want winners. Look at Washington Capitals. Washington Capitals are a perfect example of that. Look at how many guys have won Calder Cups on that roster in the last 2 years. Hershey's gone back to back. Look at the playoff numbers of Protas and
McMichael.
That's the guy. Yeah, like, all the way through. Just look at all of those guys and what they've done and why now that they've got pedigree in the NHL. So no, there's folks, if you know, it's worth watching the Providence Bruins in a big way come playoff time because hopefully they go on a run and hopefully one or two of those guys put themselves in an NHL job at the end of it.
And the environment over in Hershey is insane as well. I don't know if you guys have seen, like, they pack that building for every single home game and that crowd goes nuts.
Yeah, Providence will be the same if when they get in the playoffs and the Bruins are out, they're a great place.
Yeah, Hershey is really like a pretty unique historic AHL market. Been around for a long time and has really been a big part of that community down there. All right, we're going to be watching Providence because we need something to talk about. So.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Seriously.
No. All right, we got hour two of Sunday Skate coming up. Again, you can call or text 617-779-7937. We'll be right back.